edible ecology, trail towns, swim runs. Just a few things you'll find in the latest issue of Get Out Chattanooga, arriving this weekend from the Chattanooga Times Free Press. Sunny Montgomery writes for and is an editor of Get Out Chattanooga. Sunny, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Good to have you back. Latest edition of Get Out.
Yes, it's our spring issue. It's coming out March 1st. This is going to be a really good one. I'm really excited and proud of this issue.
And one of the things in the issue, what we call edible ecology.
Yes. Well, that's one thing you can call it. Another word for it is invasivarism. I think I'm saying that right, but I'm just kind of saying it phonetically, invasivarism. But anyway, so what this is, invasivarism, is this movement, I guess you could maybe call it kind of a subculture-y movement, where it is about eating invasive species as a means to control invasive species. So you look at a lot of the invasive species that are just taking over our region. I mean, kudzu would definitely be one of the biggest ones. So kudzu is definitely edible. It has a lot of history, especially with traditional Chinese medicine. It's pretty good for you. And I've actually had it before. I've actually had creamed kudzu, which was delicious. So this feature, it's one of our cover features, all about edible ecology, right? So it's about this movement of eating invasive species as a solution to control some of these invasive species. So let me just tell you a couple of the species that we talk about. Wild boar. I think most people are familiar with wild boar and just totally rampant problem. What is it? Big South Fork. I think they're having enormous problems with these populations that they do this really destructive thing called rooting when they're eating. So they're digging at soil and they're just killing a lot of native plants. Anyway, they're delicious. So we could all be eating wild boar. Purslane is another one, which is a succulent. Kudzu, silver carp, and then nutria, which, are you familiar with nutria?
No.
So nutria is also, they call it swamp rats. It's kind of like a cross between a muskrat and a groundhog. You find them more predominantly in Louisiana. They're an enormous problem. You know, they're contributing to a lot of erosion, a lot of flooding problems because they're eating away all the stream banks. And they haven't arrived in eastern Tennessee yet, but they're working their way here. And they're tasty and we can eat them. So this whole feature, you know, we talk about these different species, we do a breakdown of the history, how these invasive species got here. We talk about their flavor profiles, and then we went out and we got recipes from local chefs. So yeah, it's fun. I think I learned a lot while working on it, and I think just a lot of food for thought, if you will.
Do you have a favorite recipe?
Well, you know, I've had the kudzu, so I'm kind of most excited about the idea of eating kudzu, just because I've tasted it. I mean, it's super good, and why not? You know, it's everywhere. I think part of the reason that we're not eating more of these invasive species is because there is that taboo that, you know, that they're kind of these gross things that we never wanted here in the first place.
Is it safe? Is it weird? Those kinds of things.
For sure. And I think whenever you talk about foraging wild foods, I mean, obviously there's the issue of safety. The rule being, don't eat it if you're not sure what it is. I mean, come on, we shouldn't have to say that, but we do. We say it in this story. And, you know, I think one of the things with kudzu that we also point out is something you do have to think about when you're eating invasive species like kudzu or purslane is that you have to be very aware of where you're getting this stuff from, because a lot of these things could have been sprayed with herbicide or something like that. So you want to be careful. You want to be smart about it. But, you know, if you have a patch of kudzu growing in your backyard and you've never sprayed it with herbicide of any sort, then there's no reason that you shouldn't be out there harvesting it and eating it. And we have a kudzu quiche recipe in here. So maybe that'll inspire you. And also, I want to say, in regards to this feature, but also in regards to the entire magazine, our graphic design artist, Matt McLean, who did the page layouts on all of these, he killed it this month. I mean, I truly think this is one of our most beautiful magazines, and so I have to give him a shout out. This invasive species story is just gorgeous. So definitely think of Matt when you pick up one of these issues. I mean, he put a lot of hard work into this, and it's quite beautiful this month.
And there was also a lot of hard work put into the guide to trail towns.
That's right. That's another one of our features. So the Appalachian Trail, I think most people are very familiar with the Appalachian Trail. So throughout the Appalachian Trail, there are designated communities along the way. And these designated communities, sometimes they're located literally on the trail. Sometimes the Appalachian Trail will cross right through these trail towns. Other times they might be located 4 or 10 miles away from the trail. They're still connected to the AT in the sense that they have a lot of support for through hikers. So they're offering hostels, they're offering shuttle rides, restaurants that have good deals for through hikers and whatnot. So in our guide to the AT trail towns, we did 5 trail towns. I believe they are all within a 4-hour driving distance. And so it's all about how you can experience some of these trail towns through the eyes of a through hiker. So we look at these towns and we give you where these through hikers are going to be sleeping, where they're going to be eating, where they're going to be shopping, and what sort of shuttle services are available. And a lot of these towns are super cool. I mean, you have Hot Springs, North Carolina. It's just a super cool little quirky town, you know, where they'll have festivals celebrating through hikers and all sorts of little craft breweries and whatnot. So yeah, it's a pretty cool guide. You know, these nearby towns that they're all very small towns. I think that's kind of what's different is that these aren't necessarily towns you would go to otherwise. I mean, so much of their economy is there to support a lot of these through hikers. So it just kind of makes them these unique little areas set in the mountain towns of Appalachian.
Just off the beaten path, but still within reach.
That's right.
And tell us about swim runs. What are swim runs?
So that is our third feature of the month. I knew literally nothing about swim runs. I had never heard of it. We get a lot of pitches. You know, I get a lot of emails from people that I've never met that have story ideas that they want to write for Get Out. As soon as this woman, Sydney Mason is her name, she sent me this email talking about swim runs, and none of us had ever heard of swim runs before. And so it's so great and rare, honestly, when we get these pitches about stuff that we just is totally not on our radar. But so she did a great job of doing that. So swim runs, they're also called Attilas. And this is a multi-sport endurance race that I believe they originated in Sweden and they've just arrived to North America. So I think last year was the first time you could compete in a swim run and they had one in North Carolina. Sydney and her husband went and competed in it. So a swim run, you might guess, it's multi-sport and involves swimming and running. So it's basically just this grueling course of trail runs and then swims. But there's a lot of weird stuff about it. And so people should definitely pick up an issue of this and read her account. So she breaks it down. Since she competed in one, she breaks down the training, the gear, all of it. She does an amazing job of doing it. But one of the weirdest things about these races is that you run with partners, right? So you have 2 people competing in a swim run and you have to be tethered together the whole entire time. When you're running, when you're swimming, you're tethered together. And you have to carry all your gear with you, which is also sort of unique to a lot of long-distance endurance races. You know, there's no aid stations. You're not stopping to pick up your swimsuit or your running shoes. You're swimming in your running shoes. You're running in your swim clothes. And you're tethered with your partner the whole time. It's totally weird. But, you know, endurance athletes, they got to keep coming up with some creative ways to torture themselves. So it's an interesting story for sure.
If you're looking for something to do outside Ironman.
Right. Yeah. If Ironman is not challenging enough for you, perhaps a swim run. And they're in North Carolina, so you don't even have to travel that far to go compete in one if you like.
And the issue is out this weekend?
That's right. It's our spring issue. It's out March 1st. So you can also find all our stories online starting March 1st. But definitely be sure to look around for a copy, because they are beautiful, and I'm very proud of this issue.
How can people follow Get Out online?
Well, we're definitely on Facebook, so you can look up Get Out Chattanooga on Facebook. We also have a free weekly newsletter that we put out. So if you go to getoutchattanooga.com, you can sign up for it there. You can find all of our stories. That's probably the best way to do it.
All right. Sunny, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.